Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow.
All right, everybody, Merry Christmas.
Stop it.
It's already October. It's already October. Can you believe it? I mean, where's the year gone? Remember I told you.
You have jumped to Christmas, and it's Halloween.
Today,
it's Halloween season.
Today, I went into a plant shop. Christmas tree is a blink.
Stop it.
Stop it. That's what I told them. Stop it. But anyway, y'all, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. It's so nice to have you with us. And of course, Michelle didn't get up early enough today to see the Christmas trees as I did. But
I don't want to see them yet. I love Christmas, but I do not want to jump the seasons.
You better put blindfolders on. Anyway, here we are, October the 4th. Anyway, it's so great to have all of you here. Michelle, what's going on?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Good, good. Nice day. Breeze in the air. I love that a lot. I can smell smoke from a distant smokehouse somewhere.
How the seasons change.
Oh, somebody's doing a little brisket or something going on. Huh? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm thinking about Halloween, you know, now that we're in October. Are you going to dress up this year?
Absolutely, I am, huh?
What are you going to be?
I'm going to dress up as a moonshine maker.
A moonshine?
Yeah, in the swamps of Louisiana. Absolutely, I'm going to dress up.
Well, that's not a costume at all.
I'll blend right on in. Dean Slama, our engineer, what's going on over there?
Oh, man, Christmas in the air. It's coming a little late this year, though, huh?
Nice. A little late. I mean, normally it starts about September.
September,
or so.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Isn't that a shame, though? I mean, I remember when strawberries were in strawberry season, we got pumpkins. When this time of year, you went on pumpkin patch and you got a cushion on the side of the road.
Oh, you still get a cushion on the side of the road.
Yeah, I know, along with your Christmas ornaments. So. I got to get off of that Christmas subject for a minute, right? Anyway, y'all, it's good to have all of you with us. And I am, by the way, I am enjoying this nice little cool air here, Michelle.
Me too. Very nice.
Like I said, I'm going to be a moonshine. What are you going to be doing for
Halloween? I don't know.
See that? What about those Daisy Dukes you wore last year?
Yeah.
No?
You must be thinking about the Dukes of Hazzard. Is that what you're thinking about? The Dukes of Hazzard because they were moonshiners.
Well, you know
that was before your time.
I'm out of the loop on this one.
Well, let me tell you what happened. The reason I mentioned moonshiners, yesterday I was talking to one of my guys over at Revolution in New Orleans. You know Nathan, right?
Yeah.
And Nathan was telling me about making a little moonshine. Nathan said it's illegal to make moonshine. We went a conversation, and I said, I didn't know it was illegal. I thought you could make like a little bit because
personal
I know
batch
I, well
or
yeah
something.
Because and the reason it came up was because we were talking about infused alcohol for recipes in the restaurant, and you know, like I do Retiefia, you know, mm-hmm. I take brandy and I put fruit in. I mean, it's no big deal. We're just talking about it, and from the back line, Nathan said, "That's illegal. You can't do that." And I said, "What do you mean you can't? You can't do like a little batch of?" He said, "No, because I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Well, because it's like a." It's not about whether you sell it. It's about whether you make it. He said, same crime to make it, whether you sell it or not. I said, that's amazing to me. I didn't realize that we couldn't do that because, you know, making homemade alcoholic beverages, I mean, that's about as old as mankind. The Romans, the Greeks, the English, French, Spanish, all made alcohol from grain in colonial America. It was the same thing. George Washington had his still, and he made whiskeys. In fact, for colonial farmers west of the Appalachian Mountains, converting that grain into whiskey and shipping it to the east was one way that they could make use of their leftover corn. So I'm thinking, it's no big deal. I can, mm-hmm. You can make just a get a little batch of something and make a little. I don't know how to do it, but I assume I could learn and make a little alcohol. But
sure
but he's yelling that's illegal. So I guess it is. Huh?
Well, I think it has to do with the almighty dollar in the end. You know, those Appalachian mountain men. They not only used their leftover corn, but at the same time they made a little extra money, and I'm sure they needed it. It was shortly after the American Revolution that the United States found itself struggling to pay for the expense of fighting a long war.
Well, that's familiar.
Yeah, very. The government solution was to place a federal tax on liquors and spirits because everybody's going to drink, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the American people who had just fought a war to get out from under those oppressive British at the time, good friends of ours today, I might mention.
Yeah.
They had put British taxes on us, and of course, they weren't particularly pleased by this, so they decided to just keep on making their own whiskey, completely ignoring, of course, that federal tax that the British had put on. This caused what we know in American history as, Slama, you're young for this, but this was called the Whiskey Rebellion. Mm. And these rebels became known as moonshiners because in their nighttime activities, they made and they sold their illegal whiskey by moonlight. And that's where the word term moonlighting, the moonshiners come from. For those moonshiners, this wasn't a hobby or just a way to make extra cash. It was how they actually survived. If farmers had a bad year, they could survive by turning the little bit coin they had into highly profitable whiskey. And them paying taxes just meant that they wouldn't be able to feed their family. So they justified the fact that moonshining was the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. It seems like today those throwback type of drinks are becoming very popular, as you mentioned. First, absinthe made a major comeback. Then if you'll remember, rye was really big too. And now in the past few years, moonshine is all the rage. There are many moonshine-like beverages that are now being produced and sold commercially. Although if you ask any lifetime moonshiner, and
you know some.
We know some.
The fans are going to come knock your door down tomorrow.
We are not going to name names. But they'll tell you that while these commercially made products may be referred to as moonshine, any alcohol that is legally sold cannot accurately be called moonshine. After all, the nature of the name implies a product that is made or sold illegally. And there's a great discussion about this. But, you know, you talk to a true moonshiner, and they go back to their roots, and it's not moonshine unless you are in the swamp and the moon is shining. They don't care for this boutique moonshine.
Well, that's exactly right, too, because moonshine is one of America's oldest traditions. I have to say, moonshine is part of a lot of people's heritage, and folks get very sensitive when you start messing around with heritage. You know what I mean?
That's like
changing our gumbo, right?
Well,
that's about the same
thing.
That's
heresy.
The traditional definition is basically an illegal alcohol from an unregistered still on which no taxes have been paid. That's moonshine.
Money.
That's
money.
Right. That's right. And that's why
the root of all evil.
And that's why it was done at night. And from the Whiskey Rebellion and beyond, the one thing that remains true is that moonshine was made without the blessing of good old Uncle Sam. Good old Uncle Sam. Some folks feel that if you're paying taxes on your product, you lose credibility as a moonshiner. I mean, are you kidding me? I can't pay taxes. I'm a legitimate moonshiner.
That's sacrilege.
Anyway, a lot of modern distillers tend to use moonshine as a catch-all phrase for that unaged white whiskey that they're doing. But yeah, so it's a good marketing term now, and the reason we're doing the show today is because they are legitimate moonshine styles folks out there who are actually legal, right?
Well, and you know, in the spirit of confession,
yeah,
you know, when we went to Pennsylvania several years ago,
I was not there, Slama.
Yes, he was.
I was not there.
He has
Slama.
Photos.
Uh-oh.
You know, he photographs everything. Somewhere in his archives, there are pictures of still.
With a moonshiner's back. The moonshiner just shot his back.
He wasn't too keen about photos.
Having a photo.
Yeah, we don't have a photo of him.
Yeah, that's right.
But do you remember that? We went, it was cold, snowy. Our guide that day said, you know, if you don't tell anybody.
Yeah, well, God said, you food gods from the swamps of Louisiana, he said, if you don't tell anybody, I can show you a moonshine.
So have you told anybody?
I thought we were going to the zoo. I thought we were going like to the zoo.
Yeah,
or something.
I'm sure you did. So after we make our way up this snow covered frozen mountain. We get to the top,
which, by the way, you could see perfectly down 22 miles because it was strategically placed in that he built his home on the top of that mountain. He said, by the time I see a car driving up, he said, I got 22 minutes to clean up. I said, well, let's get out of here.
And you want to talk, but you remember, he even had flavored.
He had peach and all, but remember, remember his house. I mean, it was this beautiful cabin built out of and big fireplace, and I mean, rocking chairs. I mean, it was like out of the old, just out of the old.
Very hospitable, and John Volz and I drank from the still.
And he showed us how he lit little blue flame to make sure he didn't kill anybody. The alcohol had to be pure and all of that. And in this barrel was peaches, and in this barrel was this. And I said, what do you do with this? I said, can't tell you what I do with it.
Well, and let me tell you, he truly was an artist, though. He was an artisan. Think about that.
He absolutely was. And I think you really enjoyed that stuff. I took a sip of it, and my hair stood straight up on my head. And I blew a flame 3 feet out of my mouth. And, of course, I'm not a drinking man. I sip a glass of wine from time to time. But imagine going from two or three glasses of wine a year to a gulp of moonshine.
Well,
let me tell you what. I was happy to say I drank moonshine once in my life.
Yeah, once. And that was probably enough. That was probably enough for me, too. But it was an interesting experience.
It was. I was actually, I think we had done something for Penn State University where we had gone to do a big dinner, and they were taking us around the countryside. And on our journey, somebody said, you know what? I got a friend of mine. You want to go see this guy? He does a little bit moonshine. But I thought, but really, Michelle, I'm not kidding when
I
tell you.
Well, but this is the thing. Everybody knew him.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure everybody knew him.
Well, yeah, there was two state trooper cars behind the
court. I know. So...
That was the funny thing about it. The cops were there buying a quart of liquor. But I guess, hey, commerce is alive and well in the mountains of Pennsylvania. Anyway, y'all, it is an interesting topic. And today, of course, moonshine is a marketing name for so many small distillers that are legal, that do beautiful work, that are now showing up in these magnificent bottles on bars all over the U.S. And that's what we really want to talk about today. So we're going to take us a quick break, and when we come back, the legal stuff. And I want to ask why, because why do they sell little copper stills all over the internet if it's illegal? Is it what? Is that a classroom project or something? I don't know. They should be studying geography, in my opinion. We'll be back in a minute.
Come back again with a jug full of good old Mountain Dew. Y'all help me, oh, to call it that good old Mountain Dew. And them that refuse it are few. How to shove my mug if you fill up my jug with that good old Mountain Dew.
Sing one, Bill.
You want me to sing one?
Yeah, sing one.
All right. Now, my Uncle Bill's got a still on the hill where he runs out a gallon or two. You give him a pint and he thinks he's in time. Good old Mountain Dew.
He brewed a white lightning till the sun went down. And then he'd fill him a jug and he'd pass it around. Mighty, mighty pleasing, Pappy's corn squeezing.
White lightning.
Well, the G-men, T-men, revenueers too, searching for a place where he made his brew. They were looking, trying to book him, but my Pappy kept on cooking.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Slama, White Lightning, really?
George Jones.
George Jones, huh? I think that song made him famous, right?
That was the big hit.
Anyway, Michelle, we have a great guest on the show today, but I just want to recap that. I was sitting in the restaurant talking about moonshine, and I was just so shocked. I was so shocked that you just couldn't, because I know you can make like a little bit wine. I know you can make a little bit of this, but to have a cook shout across the line, you can't make a little alcohol. That's illegal. I said, no, we need to have a show about this. Why do they sell little wood quart stills on eBay and all that if you can't make it? I mean, what is that?
We are excited to have joining us today Dr. Henry Pelche. He's a pediatrician as well as the co-owner and co-founder of the Donner Pelche Distillery in Thibodaux. Now, they opened the distillery at the end of 2012, and they boast an award-winning selection of vodka, gin, whiskey, and rum. So think about that. Just down the bayou in Louisiana, we can make our own vodka, we can make our own gin, we've got whiskey, and we've got rum.
And I might say good and legal.
That's important.
Thank you for adding that. In 1937, Henry's grandfather, Harvey, and partners bought the abandoned Lafourche sugar mill in Thibodaux. Later, with their farm, Little Texas, in Napoleonville, they began growing sugarcane, and the family's been involved in the sugar industry ever since. Now, 75 years later, Henry's proud to be using his family's sugarcane to make a truly great rum, truly great gin, truly great vodka, and we are delighted to have him on the show to talk about all of his products and to teach us a little bit about moonshine. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Henry, one thing I want to start out with is, you know, we were talking about moonshine, but we've seen it crop up as a kind of a marketing name today for some of the small distillers out there. But moonshine is actually a whole different world to what we're talking about today, right?
Oh, absolutely. And traditionally, moonshine was a mostly whiskey, sometimes rum, but a high-proof, clear liquor called moonshine because it was made in the dark of night, because it was made either illegally when alcohol was outlawed or for distillers that were trying to avoid tax. So they were producing it or selling it, you know, in the dark of night. And an unaged whiskey, so it's clear and usually made from corn. So that's the historical sense of it. But, you know, now, yeah, it's popping up all over the place, mostly as a marketing people, you know, trying to produce these unaged whiskeys, and they sell them in little mason jars and things like that.
Now, you know, Louisiana being a sugar-producing state for the last, a couple hundred years, it seems that at some point in time we must have been a place where rums are great rums, but yet we were so close to South America, etc. Did it never take on here early on, or was there great distillers here that went out of business? What is kind of the history? And let's talk rum specifically right now. How did it just start to catch on, it seems?
Well, you know, if you look in the Caribbean, there's sugar all over the place, and every island nation in the Caribbean that produces sugar produces rum. There have been distillers in Louisiana, but it just really never took off here. And a few small, you know, distillers may have kind of come and gone, but nothing really of any substantial significance. And that was one of the things that got us interested is why does no one in our area with all the sugar that we produce, why didn't anybody make rum? You do have old New Orleans rum that they've been around since the late 1996, 1997 out of New Orleans. So they've been a local rum producer. But that was it.
It seems like with the geography, and it seems like with the raw materials, and it seems like with the joie de vivre of New Orleans, it just seems that New Orleans would have been a perfect epicenter for rum, with food and with all of the activities, the social life, but yet it never really took off. Why was that, do you think?
I don't know. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the different islands, each area where you go, the sugar cane is a little bit different, the soil's a little bit different, the mineral content, the climate's a little different. So each rum is a little different. So to make our rum here is not only great because we make it here and it's, you know, our own thing, it's also unique. It's going to be different than rums produced in other places.
Henry, I think you have a great marketing strategy, and I love Clever. We love Clever. So when I look at your site and I see cane to cocktail or grain to grass and handcrafted for the soul, I mean, that is, I love it. I love that your marketing scheme on that, because it certainly catches your attention, and then you have to take a sip, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we've had a good group of people that have come up with some really clever ideas. Mm-hmm. The whole story of the Rougarou for our rum brand, and, you know, our labeling with the moon and the eyes behind the cane for this mysterious mythological creature. And it's been a lot of fun, you know, making the product, telling the story, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, what was that first step for you to say, or for your group to say, this is something we want to do? I mean, obviously.
Before we get to the rest of his question, Henry, he really wants to be able to justify buying a still himself. So what he really wants to know is, did you order a still online?
Henry, that is not true.
Ed, is that kind of, did you do some sample batches first?
Oh, no, it was a long process. So we started back in about 2010 with my wife Jennifer and I and Tom and Beth Donner have been good friends for years. And we've always kind of had conversations about what would be fun, what would be a good investment, what would be something neat to do outside of medicine. And so in 2010, we were on a vacation and happened to be drinking some rum. And Tom kind of suggested, you know, why don't we make this, you know, we live in the sugarcane country, you know, part of the world here. Why don't we make rum? And the idea just kind of took off from there. So for the next 2 years, a lot of time and effort went into research, because you have to figure out, one, not only what kind of product you want to make and how do you make it, but also how do you develop the business? How do you get the licensing and all the different things that you need? That became quite complicated to get the business itself up and running. So we did about 2 years of research, and some of that involved a little bit of home development of, you know, cooking rice on the stove in our kitchen or the Donner's kitchen, and trying to figure out how to break rice down to get it to a starch that was available to be able to ferment. You know, rice, we use rice because our vodka, Ariza vodka, is made from Louisiana rice, which is also a unique product, as is our Rougarou rum line.
Now, was your life in medicine and amount of chemistry and everything you had to take in your studies, did that lead you to at least have a sense of what you were doing?
Oh, absolutely. You know, to have a science background, I didn't know, you know, offhand a whole lot about the, you know, alcohol or distillation process. But once you start doing a little research, having that background allowed it to all kind of come together and make sense and really, you know, help us in that regard.
Now what about the expertise? Once you're excited about it, the idea is generated, you're playing around with rice in the kitchen, etc. Where did you say, okay, we're going to do this and it's going to happen. Now we need to go out and find somebody who really knows what they're doing, not only the design project of the distillery itself, but also I'm sure it begins with, well, let's taste something and see if we can make it. That where did that begin? How did that come together?
Somewhere around July or so of 2012, a few months before we were ready to open, we started realizing that our idea that started out as something fun to do, kind of a hobby that might be an investment, that the project really kind of took off and grew and grew and grew. And as it grew, it became a bigger and bigger and bigger investment.
Sure, sure.
And we decided that we really do need some, you know, this isn't something we can just do on our own. We needed some professional help, and we hired a master distiller out of Portland, Oregon, who came on and worked with us for about the first 6 months and really got us kind of, took our ideas and our thoughts and our taste and, you know, all that, and kind of just kind of help tie it together and get it to actually come to fruition. And then he moved on, but in the process, we've hired other people to kind of keep it running. And then from where we started, kind of to further refine those processes and further refine our products. And it's been a lot of excitement, a lot of mistakes along the way, a very hard learning curve, but it's been great as well. And a lot of reward because of a lot of awards and good publicity and good feedback. So it's been a great ride.
Well, also your design. I mean, first of all, the design of the distillery itself. I mean, and I encourage people listening to the show, Thibodaux, Louisiana is between Baton Rouge and New Orleans on Bayou Lafourche. It's easy to find. It's you've heard the name in songs and et cetera. But by the same token, I mean, you really have to go. The design of the distillery, first and foremost, is very interesting. I mean, it looks great. It's a beautiful place. The design of the bottles itself, which I think a lot having to do with success of a product is packaging. And your packaging is really phenomenal, but of course, inside of that bottle, as you say, has been probably a lot of tears, a lot of frustrations, a lot of excitement, but yet at the same time, you arrive at a point where you know that you're doing something that makes sense, certainly good for the Louisiana economy. How has those steps been from as you just mentioned, you hired a master distiller and then that moved on. So how is the expectation been versus the reality? Is it coming together well for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's coming together great. You know, when you start to produce your product and then you don't know how it's going to come out and are people going to like it and, you know, that sort of thing. And how's it going to, you know, especially for cocktails, how is it going to blend with other, you know, mixers, and how is it going to be compatible and stuff. And it really just kind of came together far better than you know, I expected, especially like I mentioned, winning awards. You know, you want people to like your product because, you know, you made it and you're proud of it. And you want people to like it because it's local and, you know, using, you know, the Louisiana ingredients and things like that. But you want people to like it because it's good. So to get awards, not only, you know, awards outside of Louisiana, awards in San Francisco World Spirits Competition and another World Spirits Competition in Austria to win, you know, gold and silver and double gold medals, you know, just really was the icing on the cake.
No, well, that's what you hope for sure. Michelle?
Tell us about the Sugar Shine that you make, because I just like the name, Sugar Shine.
Well, you know, so we talked about moonshine earlier. Moonshine is traditionally, you know, a clear, higher proof spirit made mostly from corn. So it's really more of like a clear, unaged whiskey. Sugarshine traditionally came along when people were making moonshine with corn, but it was either very harsh or they weren't getting enough yield of alcohol out of that corn, so they would add sugar to their mash to increase the alcohol content. So that's where the name Sugarshine comes from. We use the term for our clear rum. So all of our rums are under the name Rougarou. That's our rum family. Rougarou Sugarshine is our clear rum, and it's an overproof rum. It's 101 proof.
Wow.
And it's really an interesting product. We use a blend of raw sugar and blackstrap molasses, and it has a really bold molasses flavor and smell to it that's very, very distinct. The thing I like about it, when, you know, for a lot of rums, when you mix it with, you know, whether Coke or juice or, you know, whatever type of things that you mix it with to make your cocktail, the rum disappears. The flavor kind of just disappears into the mixture. The Sugarshine really stands up to anything you mix it with, with the higher alcohol content and that old molasses flavor, and it really makes a fantastic cocktail.
You mentioned just now the awards that you've won in different countries as well as across the country. What is what's your distribution like of the product throughout the country? Is it mainly regional, or you're all over the U.S.?
Well, we're predominantly regional. We started off in Louisiana. You know, we're from Thibodaux, so we've been working hard to get into, you know, predominantly Louisiana, New Orleans, Baton Rouge area especially. But we have been able to spread a little bit further from there. We recently got a license in Mississippi, so we're working in that area. We're also licensed in Kentucky and Montana, and hopefully soon to work and move into Texas as well. But yeah, for the most part, we're predominantly in Louisiana.
And Henry, I see on your website that y'all offer tours. You have a tasting room, so I'm coming to visit.
Yeah, absolutely, come by. We do tours and tastings every day. We're open from 12 to 6, and usually we try to do tours around 4 when the production's kind of starting to wind down and the guys have a little free time. But we welcome groups, and we can always, you know, schedule tours anytime, and it's a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you go to Napa Valley and visit wineries, and you tour the winery, and they explain their process, and then you taste their product. So we do the same thing.
You know, Henry, one other thing I just wanted to tell you, other than congratulations on the great work that y'all are doing, not only to promote local products, but also to work so hard at getting those products known and of course, winning awards. It's always great. But I wanted to tell you that I was just talking at Nicholls State University, where the culinary school is, about a cooking class using alcohols in local Louisiana products, and that's certainly something we're going to do as part of my culinary class, to do marinades and cooking with products like this rum and all these other items. So I just want you to know it's also looking to move into as an ingredient in cooking as well as in sipping, and we're going to be doing that at my next semester class. We're going to be using your product to talk about culinary traditions as well. So I just want you to know that.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great. Yeah, and with the way our products are, that again, they have, you know, kind of unique flavor profiles, it can really enhance cooking. And, you know, there's so many things that people are doing now with infusions with alcohols, and even doing spirited dinners where you know, pair cocktails with various courses of food, you know, instead of doing wines. And there's so many things that you know, you can do rather than just, you know, having a drink.
Well, look, thank you so much for being with us today, and we will have all of the information on this product and distillery on our website. We can, and I know our listeners know how to find it. We'll give you all that information in a minute. But thank you so much, Henry, for being with us today, and also thank you for stepping out onto that cliff and making a decision to do something that turned out to be successful for you, and I'm sure we'll be growing in leaps and bounds. So thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
Good. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're cooking with some of this good rum.
If we're going nowhere, girl, let's go nowhere fast. Like there's moonshine in the trunk. Moonlight's on our tail. Like if we get caught, they're going to haul us off to jail.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, hidey-ho. Don't you know, chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, grape wine in a mason jar.
Oh, yeah, that was an old school song right there, Michelle. Welcome back, everybody, to Starting It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And we certainly want to thank Dr. Henry Peltier, Donna Peltier Distilleries, for all of his great information just now. And, of course, we will have all of that on our website, which we'll talk about in a minute. But, Michelle, what about books on the subject?
Well, the first book that I want to suggest is called The Foxfire Book by Elliot Wigginton. You may have this, Elliot Wigginton. This book has it all. Hog dressing, log cabin building, mountain crafts and foods, planting by the signs, snake lore, hunting tales, faith healing, moonshining, and other affairs of plain living.
Plain living.
Back in the day before the internet existed, if you wanted to learn how to make moonshine or do any of these other tasks, you went down to the library and checked out the book. Well, the Foxfire book was the original how-to on how to make moonshine.
Oh, yes,
so
absolutely.
You may want to put this on your Christmas
Fox
list, John.
Foxfire series, huh?
Now that it's Christmas, you may want to put it on the list.
Oh, I'm going to do that, huh?
There's a whole chapter in there on moonshining as a fine art.
See that?
The next book that I wanted to recommend is called Driving with the Devil.
All right, now we're getting into business.
Driving with the Devil, Southern Moonshine, Detroit Wheels, and the Birth of NASCAR by Neil Thompson. I know we have some NASCAR fans out there. After all, we're in Louisiana. This book delves into the history of NASCAR's moonshine-fueled origins, as moonshiners put more time, energy, thought, and love into their cars than any racer ever will.
What?
Just think of the Dukes and how much they relied on their car to keep them out of jail, right? So that was the original moonshiners. I mean, they did have to have
souped up cars
to make it across state lines and back without getting caught. So here's the book on it, Driving with the Devil.
And you told me it was illegal. They got to build automobiles. You can build a steel automobile. You got the recipe, but it's illegal. What is that about? Something that makes sense to me. Huh?
So both of those books, the Foxfire book by Elliot Wigington and Driving with the Devil by Neil Thompson, all those are going to be on our website. Great information. Great to add to your culture and culinary library.
All right, Salama, what about our website? What about our Stirring It Up page there, huh?
Yeah, we got a Stirring Up page on Facebook. We're out there in social media land. So if you're browsing around on your phone or your computer, you can come check us out at Stirring It Up Radio, and that's after the Facebook.com. But yeah, we're out there. We're having an engaging conversation about food, about this show. We're always encouraging our listeners to come on by with show ideas. We are looking at the Facebook page right now, and it looks like Tiffany E. Roque had something to say. She was talking up Natchitoches, Louisiana, and I guess they had the Meat Pie Festival fairly recently.
Oh, I bet that's all the Rock family up there, because you know their mother made the best.
The Lazions.
Oh, the Lazions meat pies. So there's two great meat pie makers up there, the Lazions family, and then Marie Rock.
It was the Meat Pie Festival?
Yeah.
So now it could be Meat Pie and Moonshine.
Meat Pie and Moonshine?
M&M's.
That
name's taken already. Oh.
We're always looking to keep the conversation going on Facebook. We also want to mention we have the jfolse.com website. Mm-hmm. And on that, we have the Guests and Goodies section, where we reference the books that we talk about and the recipes on the show topics. And we also have an archive page there. So you can come on by and check out our past shows in podcast format, and you can download them and listen to them at your leisure for the low cost price of free.
You know, I was thinking, you know, you can download our radio shows,
right?
Which
yes.
is what our printer in Canada, Friesen's, Doug Symington does. So I'm just thinking, when Doug listens to this show about moonshine, we will certainly be making a trip down LA1 to the distillery.
He's going to be the next great customer. So what else? Slum? Anybody asking any questions here?
Oh, we got Professor Hubble out there.
The president. Yeah.
Dr. Hubble, the president Hubble. And he's talking about, he's always got a great idea for a show, and he was talking about a fellow podcaster based out of Covington, Louisiana, Jeff Young, who does a podcast. He calls himself the Catholic Foodie, and he talks all about where food meets faith.
That's great.
And so Professor Hubble was recommending that maybe we could get together with Jeff and do something, where food meets faith.
I'm wondering where Professor Hubble, you know, I mean, he is president of the Stovehouse Club. I mean, we know that. And
he's recruiting guests. That's awesome.
Not only is he on the payroll. he should be. He should be, because we get more good ideas from him. No matter what we're doing, he's doing.
Yeah,
and that's a good deal. Like, we growing melatonin, he's growing melatonin. He sent pictures of his cashews the other day. He said best crop he ever had.
Oh,
so cashews and pumpkins in, but where food meets faith, absolutely, we may very well do that. You know, a lot of good season coming up here, Michelle. The rest of the fall, we could do a nice show.
What's the fella's name who does the show? Jeff Young.
Jeff Young.
I'm making a notation.
And he's got a show on Catholic Community Radio here in Baton Rouge called Around the Table. So all he's
right. See that. See what we don't know. See, that's why it's important to have a board of directors.
Yes.
That's it.
You see, and Hubble's in charge of that. So you see, he sent us that already. Okay. So we have a couple of books on the subject. Now, Michelle, it is not illegal to make ratifia.
You sure?
That's right.
How do you know?
Because the liquor's already paid for.
Oh, that's the thing.
See, that's already paid.
You're just infusing it.
I'm infusing it. That's right. So I have an opportunity.
So you have a round. You see, there's a roundabout.
That's a roundabout right there. And I can make liquor by buying liquor that's already been taxed as the base, alcohol.
So, like, you know what we were talking about the other day, Salama? Remember when we were talking about slow gin?
Slogin, the berries.
Slogin.
Is it the slow berries?
The slow berries from England, from the town of Slough in England. That's
gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha, okay.
And I remember that you made a fabulous slow gin.
Well,
Was it raspberry? Raspberry slow gin or blueberry?
Well, what happened was this. After you and I got back from the Olympics, where we did the food for the American Pavilion, you remember that. We had a good time, didn't we?
We had a great time.
And so we took a little
side trip. And we discovered gin.
Well, we took a little side trip, as we always do, to educate ourselves. So we took a little ride into the countryside and discovered the little town of Slough. And as we got to Slough, because we had gone to see that great
Stapleford Park, the
Bass Beer family has this real manor, this great estate that's just beautiful, and we wanted to see it. And it was in the town of Slough, so we didn't start out for Slough. We started out for
dinner at Stapleford.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
We're going to dinner. So we found Slough, and of course, all of a sudden, it dawned on us. Slough gin, this is where it's from. So I came back, and in my usual way, I started to try to find slough trees, because slough is a little hard berry that grows in England that they make slough gin from. It's a red berry that makes a nice bright liquid.
Okay.
Couldn't find it here. Didn't grow here. Nobody in America had a slough tree, blah, blah, blah. So I decided, well, you know what? I'm going to make it with raspberries. What's the difference? Slough berries, raspberries.
Same recipe, just
a different berry. And my God.
Delicious.
In my usual way, it was success.
Full success. Yeah.
Which begged the question, what happened to the slow gin industry at Chef John Folsom Company?
I do have some. The fact is, when we leave here today, I'm going to go in and I'm going to get you a bottle of slow gin for you to take.
I'm writing it down so we don't forget.
Now, making homemade liquor in my business, I can do, because I go to the store and I buy gallons of either brandy or I'll buy gallons of bourbon or vodka or whatever, and I use that as the liquor in my infusion. So that's mm-hmm. how I make my ratifias and all of that. Do you want my recipe for ratifia, or do you want it for my blackberry bounce? Which one?
I really wanted it for the slow gin.
That'd be a ratifia.
You know.
That'd be a ratifia.
Okay, so all right.
Okay, y'all, so ratifia, they're pleasant beverages that much affected, I think, in some way or other, the Creole social events. I mean, they were easy to prepare because they're just infusing liquor with local fruit. And, of course, there's a process that happens. You can even use flowers or nuts or anything else. And then you infuse it in a good French brandy, right?
You say nuts. You can put...
Yeah, you can put nuts like roasted pecans or almonds. You can do an almond liqueur, yeah.
Oh, no
I'm sorry. Salama, I'm actually looking at the recipe here. And so, you know, on our recipes, we always have the yield. You know, like, so what we're making here today is 10 to 12 fifth size bottles. That's good.
Wow.
But the prep time, I take issue with, the prep time is 6 months.
6 months.
The essence to culinary perfection is time. Huh? But anyway, so the ratifia is from that Italian word ratifa, meaning to ratify, to blend, to come together, to ratify two things. In fact, it was an old marriage term. But anyway, that's ratifia. And often, you know, there's various aromatic substances that kind of impart a flavor into the liquor. But the good thing about a ratifia, it's very basic. You begin with a simple syrup. And in this particular recipe, I'm going to take 7 pounds of sugar.
Wow.
Now remember, there's always sugar in yeast.
That's a lot of sugar.
Good stuff happening in a secret location. There's sugar in yeast. Huh?
Well, being in a world conscious of, you know, health and everything, and of course we love sugar, but can you make it with Splenda?
No, you can't make it with Splenda. It doesn't work. You take Slama, you bring 3 quarts of water to a rapid boil. Then you turn it off because you don't want to evaporate any. You just want to get it hot.
Okay.
Then you dump the 7 pounds of sugar into the 3 quarts of water and stir like crazy and keep stirring until it's well blended. You may have to add a little bit more heat to it because you're making a simple syrup.
Okay. Yeah.
And the 7 pounds of sugar into the 3 quarts of water will turn into a nice simple syrup, and that's going to become the base. Now you have to cool that, so you put it over in the refrigerator. You want to do that the day before or so. What you're going to begin with is 10 pounds of your favorite fruit or berry or flower or nut. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or a combination thereof, if you wish. I mean, if you want to experiment. But let's say in this particular, just to make it easy for you, you've already dissolved your 7 pounds of sugar in 3 quarts of water. You've stirred until it's nice and clear. Now it's a simple syrup. You put it in the refrigerator. You chill it overnight. Now today is tomorrow. I'm going to take my 10 pounds of fruit. Let's say right now, persimmons are in. Now, I'm talking about sweet, ripe, beautiful persimmons.
Right.
I take that 10 pounds of persimmons, and I put them into a crock jar.
How big?
It's enough to hold 10 pounds of persimmons and then the liquid I have.
Because I got to buy this crock.
Well, you can use a plastic. Let's say a 5-gallon plastic bucket. Let's start there for you. And it's got to have a lid on it, too, because it's going to be around a while, right?
Yeah.
So what you're going to do, you're going to take that cold, simple syrup. You will pour it into that 5-gallon bucket. Then you're going to add to that 10 pounds of your washed fruit.
So this fruit's been pitted, it's been...
No. It's a whole. Just dump
just
it on
whole.
In there.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, skin on, everything. Just wash it, make sure it's nice and clean, make sure it's 10 pounds. You're going to dump that down into the simple syrup, right? Now, you're probably saying, well, that 3 quarts won't cover 10 pounds of fruit. No, you're absolutely right. Thank you for thinking about that. That's why you need 2 gallons of inexpensive brandy.
Mm.
You with me, Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the novice would just go for the cheap big gallon, 2 gallons of inexpensive brandy. Once you get into it, like an aficionado like I am, mm-hmm. then you can start getting creative. But let's start with 2 gallons for you of inexpensive brandy. You want cheap stuff because it's not about the whiskey. It's about the infusion. And by the way, you can use rum. You can use vodka. You can use gin if you want to. I'm using brandy because the Creoles treasured their brandy Retiefias.
Okay.
Okay. So, 5-gallon bucket, you dump that 3 quarts of, now it's more than 3 quarts because you got 7 pounds of sugar that's also melted, but that's don't worry about that. That's all done. Dump it in. You put your 10 gallons of washed fruit of your choice, grapes, red grapes, doesn't matter, green grapes, peaches, plums, it doesn't matter, into that, and then you pour in those 2 gallons of inexpensive brandy.
Oops.
Now, you put a lid on top. The fruit is under the liquid by about 2 inches at this point, because that's about what it's going to be.
So it's under the brandy, and it's under the...
Yeah, well, the brandy and the simple syrup is mixed together now, so, right?
Okay.
So now when you add the fruit all sinks to the bottom. You got about 2 inches of liquor on top of it, so it's buried under the water, right? Now, on the top of that bucket, you just take your towel and you wipe it nice and clean, and you put a little sticky pad on top of that, a little sticky note, mm-hmm. and you put the date, and you put the how much fruit and everything is in it, and then you measure 6 months down the road. You put it in a cool, dark place, like a closet. It's not going to smell. It's not going to cause any odors in your house because it's all under liquor.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, all of the fruit flavor will be infused into that liquid, right?
Mm-hmm. Slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely. Now, a lot of seasoned Retiefia makers will actually put the fruit into the brandy alone for 6 months and then add the simple syrup later. And the reason they do that is that some people will say that the simple syrup, because of the sugar in it, could cause a little mold growth on top of it, whereas the liquor will totally disinfect it, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, but it depends on your condition. So either way, I mean, I give you both choices in the recipe. And 6 months later, you strain it all out. The brandy and the simple syrup will now have this beautiful fruit flavor of whatever has been infused into it. Like peach will taste like a beautiful peach, or the slow gin will be bright red because mm-hmm. I have the raspberries in it. Strain it through cheesecloth 2 or 3 times to make sure you have no particles in it. And this beautiful ratified liqueur with the fruit mm-hmm. and the sugar is now bottled into 10 fifth size bottles, and it's a good gift. Put a beautiful label on it, and you're in business.
Oh, wow.
And it's legal. That's the great thing about it, y'all. We're going to see you next week. I'm going to drink slow gin.